Hi, friends. It was so great to hear from so many of you about what guests you'd like to see on the show. Please keep those suggestions coming. I'm loving them. But I would like to make one more call out. So if we've got any listeners out there who work in the reality television industry, then please call me. Perhaps you're a producer or a casting director or you're doing wardrobe on The Bachelor. Actually, I'd really like to have a talking to someone on The Bachelor wardrobe. Can we please get some suits that fit? Whatever it is that you do, if you have some stories that you'd like to share with us, then we would love to hear from you. You can email the show on unlikelyproductions@hotmail.com or you can shoot me a message on Instagram at gjoska. Yes, I know, that's G-J-O-S-C-A. Can't wait to hear from you.
Hello. I'm Gabrielle Scawthorne, and this is Back From Reality. When I was 17 years old, my dad smuggled me out of a school excursion so that I could line up for hours at my local Westfield to audition for the reality television show Fresh Meat, where I would be competing to be a presenter on Channel V, which sounds pretty legit. But when you're plucked from suburban obscurity and thrust into the public eye in a world of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and you're not even legal, shit goes down. What happened over the next few months shaped the rest of my life in ways that I'm still discovering today. In this series of podcasts, I will be speaking with a different guest each week from the world of reality television. These chats will cover the highs and lows of the reality TV experience, how their lives have changed as a result, and what it's like to come back from reality.
Friends, 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 we are mixing things up today. You may have heard me refer to husband/producer Hugo. Well, I've got him here to help me introduce the show. Hugie Dugs, who do we have on the show today?
Today, our guest on the show is producer Yana Groves.
And what can you tell us about Yana?
Yana has worked as a producer on a whole load of iconic TV shows, Big Brother, Celebrity Apprentice, My Kitchen Rules, Bachelor in Paradise, and a whole bunch more.
See, on this series so far, we have already interviewed three producers in total. The first producer insisted on a pre-meetup, which we did. Then she stood me up with a few moments to spare. I was having flashbacks to a traumatised 16-year-old alone in HJs. Then the second one insisted on a pre-interview. We did the interview, and then she asked us not to release it. And look, I don't blame them for standing me up. I'm sure that this is an incredibly daunting prospect. These producers are still working in the industry, so they have a lot to lose. But also, this podcast is very much told from the perspective of the participant. So the producer can sometimes get a bit of a villain edit. But the third person that we interviewed was Yana Groves, who was so generous with her time, thoughtful with her responses, and most importantly, she's letting us release it. But Hughes, you noticed something a little bit interesting about this interview, and that's why I've asked you to help me introduce it. What did you notice?
Well, in editing the interview, I think all of the producers that we've spoken to, whether they've let us release their interviews or not, have said this thing about the importance of trust in working with participants on reality TV shows. It's such an important part of kind of getting people on side, getting them to trust you, to open up to you, to share their feelings with you, which is sort of what you have to do with your guests as an interviewer as well. And so I sort of realized halfway through editing the interview that you and Yana are kind of having this like charm off. You're both sort of producing each other, and it's not totally clear like who is working who or who is guiding who through the interview, which was really funny. But I think it's a really interesting interview, and I think it's a really fascinating chance to see the other side of this story that we've heard quite a lot of on this podcast.
Well, I hope that you enjoy this charm off cell block tango that Yana Groves and I do. Enjoy! So I really just wanted to hear, what was your pathway to producing? How did you get to where you are?
Oh, gosh, I started off as a broadcast journalist. Well, actually, I can go even further back. I was always interested in communications. I was a bit of a performer. I loved the arts. I loved singing and acting. When I went to uni, I studied drama and media and found that the idea of sitting back and waiting for the phone to ring for the ideal role for someone like me wasn't necessarily going to do me very good. So I wanted to gain a skill, and media for me seemed like a perfect career choice. And so that's what I did. I was very lucky. I fell into a role at the BBC in radio. So local radio, regional radio in the UK, which is a little bit like well, talk about a baptism of fire. You know, you're thrown straight into it. You're talking local stories with fast moving developments, but also, you know, you've got a smaller audience. So you have that sort of platform to train on. Anyway, I was really lucky to end up being a production assistant and then a reporter. And then I became a broadcast journalist through training at The Beat. So that's how I started off in media.
And how did the jump go from broadcasting to reality television producing?
Well, there came a point for me that I wanted to explore television and wasn't really sure how to enter. Because back then, the jump from radio to television was quite vast. And so I started applying for various jobs. And one of the jobs, the one that took me, was a talk show. So I started off in talk shows in television. I don't know if you know a talk show called Trisha.
Yes, I do.
Yes, you do. From Play School in Australia to the Trisha show in the UK. So I thought, what a great start. So I packed my little bag and moseyed on up to Norwich and worked on Trisha for quite some time.
And in your mind, what is the role of a reality television producer? What's your job?
The definition in my mind of a producer is someone who is a creative director, someone who has an idea of what story is, and creates the story. So working with the locations and the cast and the storylines that we're achieving and the format within the format, we tell that story. That's what producers do in unscripted. So the job is varied. The job is one of great responsibility. But the headline for me is we are storytellers. We also have a massive duty of care. So we have legal obligations also to in terms of how we tell our stories. You know, it's not a free-for-all for us to just create formats and, you know, get those smashing promo moments. It's really to ensure that we're being true to the format, we're being true to the emotions of the moment, but also making sure that people are taken care of.
What's your favorite part of the job?
My favorite part of the job is getting to know people. I, as I said, I'm slightly addicted to storytelling. I'm fascinated by the human condition. And if I get the opportunity to see someone that's super excited about the opportunity a show can bring, and I see them grow during that process through their own sort of exploration. You know, we do interviews with people. When we're doing interviews with people, we're asking them some of the deepest, darkest questions they've ever asked themselves. So sometimes you see people grow in that space. You know, if you're watching MasterChef, for example, you'll watch someone come in saying, I've always loved cooking. Cooking is a passion for me. And my dream is to win MasterChef because I want to start my own restaurant. Okay, that's a very simplistic example. But if you see somebody grow in their talents and learn and become skilled and resilient and strong, and then you see them win and go on to fulfill their dreams, there's nothing better. There's nothing more fulfilling. And for me, that is gold.
Yeah, because you've helped someone achieve their dream, right? Like you've played a part in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I read an interview of yours and you were giving advice to reality television hopefuls. And you said, look, whatever you do, be yourself, because a producer can spot a lie or an act a mile away. I was just wondering, what are the tells?
I think it's about being very clever in your questioning. So I look for authenticity. I think most producers and casting directors and executives are looking for genuine people. People who are happy in their own skin. So of course, in any interview, whether it's a job interview or whether it's for a big TV show, of course you're going to be on your best behavior, you're going to want to shine, and there'll be an element of a little bit of gold dust on you. But the truth be told, I want to see someone say, there's nothing I want more than to find love. And I genuinely mean it. And you can feel it. You know, we know how to relate to people. You can tell. If someone goes, I just want to be seen. I've always wanted to be famous. I've always wanted to be on screen. You know, sure, that works for a talent show. And by the way, I'm not excluding talent shows, but you have to have some element of genuine interest in the show's elements. So whether that's a DIY show or whether that is, you know, a gold digging show. You want people who are genuine so that the audience can relate to them too. These are not scripted scenarios. The audience wants genuine stories to follow and be inspired by, genuine people to go on their journey with, genuine people that they can identify with. So I think the audience can spot a phony from a mile off too.
I call that a bullshit meter.
It is called a bullshit meter. We don't always get it right. That meter can be slightly faulty. We work really hard in the casting process to weed out or to filter through those who we know can stay the course and those who we know will probably not be able to handle the experience.
Have you had a bullshit meter malfunction that springs to mind? Have you met someone and gone, they're gonna be great, they're that person, and then they've gone completely off course?
It's very, very, very rare because the casting process is so, and by the way, I am talking about the big productions. You know, I've worked on huge shows with big production companies, huge budgets. So, you know, the casting period is lengthy and thorough. And whether that is, that casting process may happen within pre-production or whether there's a whole separate team dedicated to casting. So Warner Brothers, for example, have their own team dedicated to casting. We're literally the best in the biz who do that only, and they are exceptional at it. So by the time somebody lands in the production office, they've been through a stringent series of, you know, sort of interviews and castings. So from my perspective, somebody's probably been spoken to between 3 and 4 times, maybe more, well before they are ever on screen. So it's never, oh, this person looks good. Oh, their phone interview looks good. Oh my gosh, you know, we've met them. Oh, look at their casting video, done. No, there's a lot of, well, I guess it's an investigation or it's an understanding really of who somebody is. What their motivations are. Do they fit within the format? Do they fit within other cast members that you may have? Do they work in terms of what this series is offering? So there are a lot of elements that producers are looking for.
I mean, that curation that you started to touch on, that's such a crucial part of getting good dynamics on television. And we have a lot of guests talk about, you know, their group casting days where you'll get like 40 people in a room and they've got to do theater sports and work through moral hypotheticals, but they have no idea what they're being assessed on. Every single person that I've spoken to who's done something like that, they go, I still have no idea what was being assessed. Can you shine some light on that? What are you looking for? What's going on?
It actually depends on the show. One thing I will say, all of the shows have in common is an X factor. People that have a pull, you know, your eye is drawn to somebody that is unique, but they may be unique in a very ordinary, relatable way. So, you know, I often say, don't dye your hair blue just for the sake of standing out. You should be able to stand out in your personality. However, there's some people who have blue hair and it's wonderful and that's their personality and they had the blue hair before the casting. So I'm just saying it's about being yourself, being authentic and being yourself. When people perform, and I would just want to go back to this, think of Big Brother. If somebody is chosen for Big Brother, and by the way, by the time somebody is in that Big Brother house, they have gone through a stringent process of casting. If somebody is hoping to perform their way through their time in the Big Brother house, it just won't work. They won't last because it's impossible. It's physically and emotionally impossible to remain in an act on one of these unscripted shows because human nature will always shine. And that's why you've got to go for people who are themselves. And by the way, that varies. People react differently under pressure. People react differently in joy. People react differently, you know, in different circumstances, in group dynamics, on their own, etc. But you want somebody who can show their true integrity.
And you were mentioning that vigorous casting process, especially with Big Brother, that there are so many different stages before you actually get on the screens. And when I've been talking to my guests, it seems like the psych evaluation is one of the very last points of call, quite often the last point of call.
And that ordering always seems strange to me, because surely as the producers are getting to know these contestants, they want these people to go on the show. And so are those psych evaluations ever then viewed with a bias of, I want this person on the show?
Well, by law, it can't be.
Okay.
I mean, it doesn't make sense, because actually psych evaluations are done by psychologists or therapists who are licensed therapists or licensed psychologists. This is not done by the producers. I think, and I don't know much about what happens in those psych evaluations, but what I would say is, it is, and I'll go back to duty of care, producers, production companies, networks have a legal responsibility, a moral responsibility, an ethical responsibility to ensure that not only their team and crew are safe emotionally and physically, but that the cast members, the very cast that are creating or being part of that successful format, are safe and well. Now, obviously, in any reality or unscripted show, the whole point, and even in documentary, the whole point is to see the highs and lows of the human spirit. At no point have I worked on a show where it's been clear or obvious that blah is close to meltdown, or that blah may, is in danger of a nervous breakdown. I haven't seen that. It wouldn't be in the production company's best interest to put people in that position. That's just from my experience. I think the psych test is done in order to ensure that people going in have the resilience and strength to handle what's coming up. So are the cast members aware of what the process is? Have they been briefed properly by production and by the executives to explain what this process will be emotionally? There are many, many questions that add to that evaluation. And, you know, I'm sure that in psych tests, there are questions that would ask, could you handle this if blah happened? What would your reaction be if blah happened? So I don't think anyone in a psychological or a therapist capacity would want to put anybody forward if there was a danger of someone failing emotionally or mentally. It's not in anyone's interest, I don't think.
Yeah. And if I'm to put the psych evaluation into a simple terms here, I guess you've got green light. So someone goes through this process and the psychologist goes, yep, they're green light, they're great, they're very resilient, they're ready to go. Then you've got red lights of, no, this person is not going to be able to handle this. But then I wonder if you've got this kind of amber light, and the psychologist says it could go either way here. And so I wonder if then that's the area of bias that I'm talking about, that if you as a producer has formed an attachment to this person, if there is a bias that could swing someone to a green light when they could have possibly been a red.
I haven't seen it. I've not experienced that. And it certainly wouldn't be in my productions, and it wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't be putting somebody through in an amber situation. And then equally, I don't think it's ever as clear cut as even saying somebody is an amber situation. They're either green lit or they're not green lit. Don't get me wrong. I have also been in a situation where there's somebody that we really, really wanted, really desperately wanted, and couldn't because they were red lit.
What's the red light?
Well, if somebody's not emotionally strong enough to go through a reality experience, perhaps they're going through an emotional journey and they may not be quite strong enough yet. You know, there have been many cast members I've known who just need to stand back for a while and maybe re-audition next year. It might not be the right time for them. It might be that they're just a little vulnerable. But, you know, I can't speak for every producer. We all operate in different ways, and each show has different parameters. And going on The Voice is a very different experience from going on MKR. You know, My Kitchen Rules is a long-running, really physical, emotional show that requires two people to support each other and work through something quite challenging. So, you know, and The Voice is about that dream. So it depends on the dynamics. It depends on what is required. Do you need to live away from home for 3 months? Are you going to be on the road? Are you going to be touring? You know, it's not only about being on the show. It's about whether someone can handle the rigor of the experience. And it's huge for cast and crew. So I think each show looks at those scenarios and whether someone will be able to make it through and handle it. And obviously, sometimes people, as I said, react differently in different circumstances. So it's all very good and well for us to do all the homework and all the due diligence, but, you know, we're not mind readers. I know that all the producers I know and have worked with have always done their best and their utmost to protect and to support any cast member that they have under their care. And I know that producers get a bad rap sometimes. I know we do. But the truth is, I've worked with people who have the best intentions. And with the best intentions come processes that have been put in place to ensure in the best possible way that everybody ends up safe and well.
The psych reports that we're talking about, is that a box that needs to be ticked to allow someone onto the show? Or do you also use that information going forward in the filming? Are you able to use some of that information to know how to work with someone moving forward?
There are recommendations, always recommendations, in terms of, you know, okay, for example, and I've only ever seen one or two examples like this, but for example, if someone has a very severe fear of snakes, we probably would be very aware not to put this person in a challenge full of snakes. Sometimes it's right. So for example, if you, lovely Gab, were applying for a show, I don't know, let's say it's Survivor. Now, obviously, if it's on Survivor that you have fear of snakes, but you're applying for Survivor, right? You're probably going to come across a snake. And it doesn't mean production is going to put you in front of a snake, but it might be part of your storyline that, you know, you may not be able to sleep because you're worried about snakes. You know what I'm saying? It's part of who you are. But equally, you know, if you're working on a DIY show, production, of course, would not put you in a situation that's going to terrorize you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's not within the context.
It's all about context. So these are very sort of broad strokes of scenarios because there's so many different examples of shows. It could be the glass blowing show. It could be, you know, Next Top Model. It could be, there's so many different genres which require different attendance, different emotions, different engagement from cast. So it really depends on what the circumstance is. In terms of psych report, I mean, look, this is not an area I'm an expert in whatsoever. And the big shows I've worked on, really, I know have done their due diligence with their cast. And as I say, I cannot speak for any other producers.
I mean, that's why we're so lucky to talk to you, because you've done so much. I mean, your CV is kind of a whack to the face of, you know, Big Brother, Farmer Wants a Wife. So I can understand exactly what you're saying, of each show is different. I want to get back a bit to what you were saying about storytelling and that your job as a producer is storytelling. How much of that is proactive and how much is reactive? You know, on a show like, say, Big Brother, do you have these kind of arching storylines that you are moving your contestants through, or are you just creating narrative on the fly in the moment?
I would say one of the curses of being a TV producer in Unscripted is that we're always, look, let's just be honest, we're control freaks, right? We are creative control freaks. And even before we have a cast, think about it, each format already tells you what's going to happen, right? Round one, there'll be blah, blah, blah people. Round two, there'll be da. Round three, da, da, da. And then there's a winner, right? If it's a competition. Somebody gets a rose, somebody doesn't get a rose. You know, somebody falls down, whatever it might be. So that's already ingrained in the format. As creators, we create formats. And the format is there, so we have parameters. I think the term reality is what throws people. There's an expectation that everything is completely ad hoc and natural. So for example, with Bachelor in Paradise, somebody has actually said to me once, I've heard that it's all set up. And I thought in my head, I don't really know what you mean. What does that mean? And the more we discussed it, the more I realized they didn't really understand how the show was made. And I had to explain. I said, do you really think that 10, 12 singles, coincidentally, from previous Bachelor franchise shows, ended up at a resort on a tropical island together at the same time?
Oh my God, what are you doing here?
Arriving one by one. You know what I'm saying, right? Right, right.
Mm.
And as soon as I was explaining that, you could see the penny drop. And the way I describe, you know, reality shows is that we create environments in which real emotion can develop and real relationships can develop. So, oh my gosh, look. Oh no, there's a cheese board on the beach, right? It is an environment, of course, there's no way that, you know, within the formats that we shoot and create, that if it was that, it would be a documentary. And it's not a documentary. It is an obdoc, perhaps you could say. You could say it's a docudrama. You could, you know, there are different terms for it these days. But within a format, you're creating environments for human emotion and relationships to develop. By the way, we try to have some idea of what might happen. We try our best to go, oh my God, I can imagine that, you know, blah is going to cook, you know, do a blancmange and it's going to be a smash hit. Well, guess what? John might try and make a strawberry blancmange that is runny and horrible. Producers can't do anything about that. So my point is, as producers, we are, you know, the curse of our role is that we are always putting out fires, meaning we're always having to adapt to what unfolds, which is completely unpredictable.
You were mentioning Bachelor in Paradise. I'm so sorry if this is a season you worked on, but there was a point in previous seasons where it did seem that it got to a point where it was just a 20-year-old on a sun lounger with a rum and coke. And I've spoken to contestants who have been on the show who have said, yeah, it just kind of got to this point where we were just lying around. Have you ever gotten to a point in a reality show where you've had this lull of activity? And how do you then turn it around and kind of inject some drama into that situation?
But why would you want to inject drama into the situation?
So there's no pressure. It's not like someone's coming to you and saying, no one's doing anything.
Well, look, the truth of the matter is this. Time is limited. We're all sticking to really stringent schedules, budgets, etc. You know, as again, these are not raw documentaries. You're not talking about finding all of a sudden, if you're talking about Survivor, for example, finding two teams of people in a jungle. Let's just watch what they do. No, it's a format. So it has to be shot and finished at a certain time, and it needs to adhere to, you know, certain shoot times, etc. We all have schedules to stick to. So if we had forever to shoot, if we had 2 years to shoot, this would be a very different story. But that's not the case. And so there's no show if there is no content. Equally, some of the best stuff comes out of producers sitting back and watching what happens, because that's where real raw emotion can bubble to the top. It's when you see real emotions come out. A tiny little conversation can grow into something really intriguing and important. So I don't think that's anything to be fearful of, and that's the point. Equally, it's important for any show you're creating to have some pace. So this is what we do. We navigate and move around whatever situation we're in.
And I guess a lot of that narrative can be crafted as well in editing. And we have a lot of people on the show. I'm bowled over by how many people say, no, they were the words that came out of my mouth. I said those words. But then in the very next sentence, they'll say to me, oh yeah, it just sounded a bit strange because it was an answer to a completely different question. And I go, oh, okay. See, that doesn't really sound like a fair representation. And I was just wondering, do you think when someone signs up to a reality television show, that they are signing up, that their words can be used in whatever way will suit the narrative of the show? Or do you think that there are ethical implications on how a show is edited?
There are always ethical implications on how a show is edited. And I think anyone who has any moral standard would say the same. It is absolutely crucial, and it's known. And if you're a good producer and you have, you know, you've done your yards and you really understand what your moral responsibility is, it's very, very obvious. You can't change the meaning of what someone's saying. It's unethical, it's immoral, and it's just not right or fair. And it's misrepresentation, first and foremost. I know editors and post-production execs work hard to ensure that storylines are told as close to the truth as possible. The challenge with shows like this is that if it's a 24-hour show, that's 24 hours of footage a day, right? It's running for months. Can you even just wrap your head around the hours and hours and hours of footage that need to be together in a half hour or an hour is insane. So it's a little bit like a jigsaw puzzle to be able to tell story in a very clear narrative. And I know that post-production really struggles with that. I've worked in post-production. I've struggled with it. It's very, very hard to ensure that integrity. I mean, look, you either do it or you don't, as far as I'm concerned. But obviously, I know that from a cast member's perspective, it's weird because you were painting that wall or whatever you might have been doing. And it wasn't until the next day that you had a conversation with blah. But there could be 10 other storylines happening. And in order to get that all into half an hour or an hour, it has to be reduced in some way, in a comprehensive manner.
It is that thing of trying to represent what happened as accurately as possible. But, you know, even with this podcast, because I do try and give my guests, I let them listen to it. And if there's something that they truly object to, you know, I want them to be able to look over that. And I have had people come to me and say, I said such an awful thing there. Please take it out. Please, please, I'm begging you, take it out. And I find that really difficult because I do kind of go, oh, that actually changes the entire course of what happens. And you reference it later. And
yeah, because that's the juice.
But it is this very difficult balance. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering, has anyone ever come to you and gone, please, Jana, take that out. That will not help me, please.
No, because in every situation, contestants, contributors are reminded that they're on a television show. They are wearing a microphone pack. There are cameras everywhere. It's not like they're in the supermarket and are being followed without knowing. You know, I think this is something really, I'm glad we're having this discussion because it's something that frustrates me a little. I feel the public and also some cast members are omitting the fact that they are very aware that they are on camera and they know what it means to go on a show. If you've given up your job and, you know, disappeared from the face of the earth for 6 months and you've seen this show and you know what shows are about and you know that you will appear on a show and also you've been briefed, oh my God, the legal briefings that executives do to cast members are so comprehensive and they have to be at the beginning of any shooting. Every cast member is explained to and exposed to exactly what it means to be on camera. If you can see a camera can see you, right? If you're wearing a microphone, everything you say can be recorded. All those things I have heard said by executives in legal briefings. So I have an issue, I feel, with cast members saying they didn't know that what they said would have been included in any cut. Because if you are participating willingly in a show that explores your emotions, and that's what it's about. Let's just look at the raw ingredients of a great show. It's humor. It's maybe conflict. It might be sadness, joy, laughter, whatever it may be. It's the gamut of human emotions. It's that connectivity. Without it, there is no show. If people were acting, then they wouldn't have those moments of, oh God, did I just cry on camera? And nobody wants to be seen to be crying on camera, but it's a very important part of the idea of seeing someone in their true emotion. So of course, there will always be people who have regrets about what has been seen, what they might have said, but that's what they said. And, you know, it might be an integral part of their story. And I think you just touched on it. If somebody's saying, please take that bit out, but actually it's the part that takes you to your conclusion, you know? So I think this is a very complicated story, but from my perspective, you're wearing a microphone and you know, and there's been briefing. And as I said, the casting process is so stringent and so detailed that by the time somebody is on camera, they have had conversation after conversation after conversation and many opportunities to back out.
There are some things that happen that, for instance, when you were working on Big Brother in 2006, the turkey slap incident. There are some things that happen that I think surely that happened at a time when you forgot the cameras were there. But with that incident, in 2006, two Big Brother male contestants held down a female contestant and put their genitals on her face. As a producer, when you're watching something like that, when do you step in?
Oh, you step in straight away. Of course, you step in immediately. So there are a lot of things that happen behind the scenes that obviously don't make the cut. So that's a great example. Nobody really knows what happened immediately. I'm telling you, things were happening immediately. There wasn't a breath. Action was taken immediately. So that's what we do. We have a duty of care.
But how did that happen immediately? Because it happened in the middle of the night, right? So
steps were taken immediately.
Okay.
Remember, it's not like it was caught on a CCTV camera. You know, we have a duty of care to watch and make sure people are okay. So that's always happening in any show. So anyway, what I'm saying is there are many situations on any shows that if there's ever a moment where somebody appears to be in distress, it is our duty of care to make sure they are okay. If they are not, they're taken aside and offered support, whether that be by a psychologist, by a therapist, a counselor, but they're definitely always offered support. When I brief my teams and when I have been in junior positions, there's always a briefing to say, escalate, escalate, escalate. If something's going on, if you're worried about the safety or well-being of somebody, flag it. I really want to also point out, I have seen contestants and contributors in a really uncomfortable position. And I've also seen a shoot stop because people are in an uncomfortable situation. Of course, you will never know about that because that doesn't, it's not in the cut. But every single show I've ever worked on, duty of care has been number one.
And that duty of care needs to be adhered to on both sides. When I talk to guests about their relationship with the producer, it's a mixed bag with hindsight. I think in hindsight, they kind of go, oh. But when they speak about when they're actually filming with their producer, most of my contestants say I was incredibly close with my producer. How do you view your relationship with contestants?
I take it very seriously. And I'm very lucky that through my years of being an associate producer, a senior producer, a series producer, I'm very protective, extremely protective, very motherly, and I want the best for them. I recognize that people have given up their lives and their time and they put their trust in us as producers. And that's a really privileged position for us. And so we must treat it as such. And I do. And I'm still in touch with and I check up on some of the ex-contestants and contributors that I've worked with. And they've got some bloody funny stories to tell you. I'll tell you that much. Because, you know, we've been through something together. But I know that they appreciate the care that I give and the time I spend with them. And, you know, I'm a hard taskmaster when it comes to, you know, ensuring that they're being honest and open in the moment. How do you feel? You know, asking how they feel and how they're relating. But yeah, I'm really protective of the people I work with. I really am. But I've got a question for you. What was your experience? You were on a show as well.
I would have said that I was very close to my producers at the time. Mm-hmm. Very, very close because I was 17. I was really young. And actually, I've recently been quite distressed. I was really distressed. I was meant to interview my producer on the show. And we had a bunch of kind of, you know, we met up beforehand and I jumped through a bunch of hoops for her. And then she stood me up.
Aww.
She stood me up on the morning of. She just... And I'd done all of the questions because she wanted to be really on top. And I think, you know, I asked questions about duty of care because I was 17 and you know, put in rock stars' bedrooms when I was 17 and, you know, people didn't know where I was. And I think it must have been quite confronting for her to look at those questions and go, oh, because there was no aftercare or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
And,
so you had a difficult experience.
Yeah, yeah. But and we've interviewed quite a few producers now and I'm meeting so many different approaches. And I've got to say, like, I would tell you my passcode to my bank account right now, Yana.
Great, babe. Yeah. Let's do it.
Honestly, you've got that thing. You've just got that. I feel like I could tell you anything. And, you know, I was interviewing a counsellor who specialises in reality television and the aftercare of contestants. And she said that it's undeniable with some producers, there's an element of grooming, that they are very good at making trust with you immediately, really, really quick trust with their contestants. But it sounds like you take that very seriously and you're very aware that people are looking to someone to trust very quickly. And you were mentioning that you keep in touch with your contestants. But in order to do your job, do you have professional boundaries that you put between you and your contestants?
Oh, 100%. Now, I say I stay in touch with my contestants. I hear of how they're doing. There's one, two that I have given maybe 5 years wide berth, and then I reconnect. I think it's really important for producers and contributors to maintain a professional distance. We're doing a job. We're not anyone's best friend. We're doing a job. We have a duty of care. In the moment, to be connective and safe, it's a little bit, in my mind, like a teacher-student situation. I care, probably to a fault, how people feel. I feel their emotions when I'm doing an interview with somebody. The reason I'm able to see that raw emotion is because it's real, and it's real in the moment. And it doesn't mean that I'm trying to take something from them. I just want them to have the experience, the full experience, to reach the end goal. And I do see it as a process. So I don't really stay in touch. When they've reached out to me, of course, I'll have a chat and see how they're doing and make sure they're okay, of course. But in terms of friendship, that's something that is separate. And if it transpires down the line that we become friends, fantastic. But as you can imagine, I've worked with thousands and thousands of people, all of whom I care about deeply in my professional capacity.
You were saying that, you know, you check up on how people are. Have you ever had a contestant of yours who's not done well after the show?
Well, it depends what you mean by done well.
I mean their mental health has suffered as a result of the show.
No one that I've produced, luckily, touch wood, no one that I've produced. If that had been the case and I knew about it, I'd be at their doorstep.
Because aftercare is, especially, you know, in the UK right now, it's a massive discussion. What does successful aftercare look like to you?
Well, the shows that I've worked on and the aftercare that's been arranged has been through publicity or through, well, of course, publicity goes on and on, because remember, there are contracts that probably last a year, maybe 2 years after the show. So they are still under the umbrella and under the care of production companies. Again, that varies show to show. I can't speak on behalf of any production company or any particular show, but always, every show I've ever worked on has offered emotional and psychiatric support. So that's what I've seen and known. And even in my situations, I've said this a few times, if I've seen somebody in distress, that is always the go-to. You can always speak to our psychologist. You can always speak, you know, would you like to speak to the psychologist? That can be mid-shoot. That is always on offer. It is, I tell my teams, you know, when I was working in a team under the umbrella of other execs, always, can we offer you anything? Do you need to step out? Do you want to talk? Would you like to speak to a psychologist? That's my experience. So my experience may be very different to somebody else, but especially when it comes to aftercare. And I will say this. Now, as you probably know, I do training for TV producers and mentorship for TV producers. It is for this very reason that I do what I do. This is why I'm so passionate about it. And this is why I'm so, dagnabbit! Because it's not good enough. It's not good enough. If there are people saying they weren't offered aftercare, it's not good enough. If there are people saying that they weren't protected during shooting, it's not good enough. So I'm training upcoming producers and content creators to be aware of what their role is and that they're dealing with human hearts and human people and human sensibilities, and to know what their responsibilities are legally, morally, and ethically. Those things are key. And if we can all come to an understanding of what that is, we can have great shows with very happy people. So as I say, I've been very lucky, touch wood, to have been in a situation where people have worked with me directly, you know, when I was on the floor and in the field. They sometimes don't like me in the moment because I'm a taskmaster. What are you cooking? Tell me about those carrots. Shut up, Yana, I'm trying to chop the carrots. You know, I'm the hard taskmaster, but I do it with love, and they know I do it with love. And we become best of friends afterwards. So they know my professional capacity and they know what I need to do and they know what they need to do. They have a job too, right? But it is absolutely number one on my training, duty of care. It's our number one role as producers.
I mean, it sounds like you've been, I go to say the word lucky, but it's not luck because you've clearly had such a focus on the welfare of your contestants. But here in the UK, you know, there have been people who have not done well, and we've had fatalities here now as well as a result of a contestant being on a reality TV show. What do you think it is about the experience that gets someone to that place?
Well, first of all, if somebody has sunk to such depths and that despair, I think there's inherently an issue probably from the beginning. I don't know these cases, by the way, so I don't want to talk out of turn here. It's a very sensitive subject. What I think is key is for people to manage expectations. As I say, when somebody is considering applying for a television show, think about what the implications are or could be. There is a certain allure to appearing on a reality TV show or on an unscripted TV show, whether that's Hunting for Gold or whether that's building your own house. The hope is that you'll win the competition or that you'll have an incredible experience all the way through. You know, you'll meet people you've never met before. You'll travel the world. And that's what we hope people get out of it. We want people to get the best out of it. I don't think any producer on this God-given planet wants someone to go through a bad experience. What I think people need to do before they come on reality TV shows is really think about it. Think about why you're doing it. Again, there's this question of what's your motivation? Why do you want to be in front of camera? Is it because it's going to help you in your future career? If so, fantastic. Will it help you get that restaurant in Italy? Will it help you become the world's best truck driver? Will it, you know, will it boost your modeling career? All of those motivations are perfectly fabulous. As long as you know where you're going and where you're headed, and you are aware and you're listening carefully to what you're being told by your producers, which is often very much the truth and what is evident. And your producers are telling you, this is going to be a really tough trip, a tough journey. But if you hang in there and you work with it and you enjoy your moments and you embrace the process, you will thrive. I think it's about expectations and being aware and being honest with yourself and true to yourself. And this comes right back to the casting process. This is why it is key in our casting process to choose people who are genuine, with real intentions, who have their heads screwed on and who know who they are.
And lastly, would you go on reality television?
Well, I chose to be a producer, and a producer is behind the scenes. Now, having said that, you know, as I mentioned, I have a background in performance. I've sang for years. You know, I've been on stage and I've done my time on stage. I'm very comfortable behind the camera, and really there isn't necessarily the show that would work for me, so probably not.
Jana, if you were producing a reality television on cleaning toilets, I'd be on it.
I love you, sweetheart. Let's go and be married.
let's make that show. And that concludes my interview with the power that is Jana Groves. I think she probably won that charm off. I was so heartened by Jana's strong sense of ethics and responsibility to the participants that she works with. It was genuinely reassuring to hear someone talk so passionately about duty of care after some of the stories that we've heard on this podcast. Jana, I'm ready to pull up my sleeves and come and work for you. Let's get this toilet scrubbing show off the ground. This podcast was produced by Hugo Chiarella for Unlikely Productions. The dulcet melody that you are listening to right now was crafted by Robert Tripolino. If you reckon this podcast is a bit of all right, please tell your mates, post about the podcast and leave us a review on iTunes to help other people find the show. Come on, get a girl out there. You can also follow me at Gjoska on Instagram. Yeah, I know, that's Gjoska. Not my best, not my worst. You can also follow me, Scorthorn Gab, on Twitter. It's my name, but backwards. Hey, we should do this again sometime.